If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
Sending out good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes.
108 breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grind America Show. Coming back at you after a week with no intro last week. We just forgot the intro.
I'm not tracking either. I don't know what to say.
There is no right. There is no. I feel like it's a trap. I trapped myself. There was no way out. No way out. Of course, I was down in New York. I was in upstate New York and doing the Randall Carlson tour, the Randall Carlson Finger Lakes tour. We're going to try and do it in the hotel and all this. And it just wasn't, you know, it's just a pain when you're traveling, trying to do that. Of course, we're doing the hotel jumping thing on that one too, where we move around a couple times. I had to rent a U-Haul trailer and drag a bunch of luggage around. Of course, people want to skip these lazy ramblings. There's a timestamp in the show notes all the time. Just click on that timestamp. Take you right to the interview this week. Of course, we got Deborah Stangle and Richard Keppel talking about high vibe relationships. It was a fun chat.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. So yeah, skip forward. Otherwise we're going to just lazy ramblings and advertise some of our stuff that we got going on, like trips. Like how was it? Was it good? It looked like it rained a lot there.
Did rain a lot. Yeah. And a lot of transgender stuff going on in Ithaca. I can say that. Very. If they have a hub, it would seem to be there. Seems to be a lot more than normal. I think more than normal numbers, more than normal. I mean, maybe I'm out west. Maybe it's just like this everywhere out east, back east, as Graham would say. Maybe back east is just inundated.
Yeah.
Definitely seen a lot of waterfalls. A lot of cool waterfalls.
A lot of valleys. Valleys, like less open sky. Did you notice that?
No open sky. There was no open sky because it was cloudy all the time. And
was it dark at night?
It was dark at night. There was a crazy storm one night, too. It was, rained every day, I think. Not all day, every day. We had pretty decent weather most of the time. It was kind of humid, but definitely wasn't like sunny all the time.
So the
waterfalls were giving her. I mean, that waterfall we went and seen the last day, I forget what it was called. It was at Letchworth State Park. I don't know if that's right, but because we went to Watkins Glen that day and the Letchworth, and Letchworth was way bigger, cooler waterfall, had a big cool canyon in it. That water, you could get right there, right up beside it. Then we went to Niagara Falls. Of course, that was pretty cool. And there was Buttermilk Falls and a couple other smaller waterfalls that we seen. So there was definitely a lot of cool waterfalls, very green, very surreal canyons, sort of little mini canyons cut out where you can see the effects of what would seem to be a lot less water than you see out west when you look at the landscape out west.
The Scablands.
I got to go swimming in Lake America. So
did you get to drive up and down the lake, like Seneca Lake, for example? Was the lakeside drive good? Like, was it like the Okanagan kind of, where you get to do these long meandering drives along the big lakes?
They were kind of narrower than you think.
Oh, so really?
Like everywhere I went, you could really just sort of see across them.
Really?
Like very long and slender. Now, that could have been just the places I was looking at them, but they seem very, very long and slender. And we weren't along the side of them a lot, but yeah, a little bit. Honestly, I think when I was alongside of it the most was when I was going to pick up the food. Probably. But I also missed some of the stuff because I was going to get the food and things like that. But food was great. Trip was great. Great group. Great group. Really meshed well. Had a good time. Had a few people, past guests, say that it was their best trip they've been on of ours. So that was good. And a bunch of people that are going to come on the Scablons one, which is now in June. Of course, the Chelan was canceled. We do have the trip in June now. Next June, beginning of next June, we're going to lock in the date. It's going to be in the first half of June, 2027. 6 days, of course, that's Spokane, Soap Lake, and Lewiston to do the jet boat ride, 60 miles up Hell's Canyon, 55-person jet boat up the canyon. Going to be epic. Final Scablands, we're calling it, because we're definitely not going back there for a while if we ever do again. The plan is to move on to some other stuff. Some other places Randall wants to go and check out. You can only go rip around the Scablon so many times before it's like, what are we doing? So we're going to do that again.
First time, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
And second and third and fourth probably.
Yeah, you could go there a bunch of times. I'm after going there like 11 times. So it's like, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot of Scablons. And, you know, but we're going to do it. There was a bunch of people that haven't done it yet that want to do it. So we're like, well, we should give them one more shot. And I mean, it is really is quite popular already. I think there's 13 or 14 spots spoken for or deposited on or that sort of stuff. So out of 40. So we're talking about approaching 50% rather quickly. It's only been on sale a couple of weeks. So if that's something you've been wanting to do, if you want to do that Scablons trip, get a deposit in over at contact@thecabin.com/Scablons. That won't be our final tour with Randall Carlson, but that's the final Scablons tour. So if you want to see that sort of landscape that started it all, you can check it out. I mean, the promo that Claude made was amazing.
That Claude made?
To be fair, I used Suno to make the song, and that took a minute and like $28. To get it to finally make one that sound like, what is it, Europe? Is it Europe that sings the song, The Final Countdown?
Yeah, it's Europe. Yeah.
So, because you can't, if you start putting in other bands, it like blacklists it. It says, oh, I can't do this. It's copyright infringement. So, but I was able to get one kind of close for the final Scablons, but it made a whole song. I'll play the song as the outro because it's all like flood. It's a flood song. It's basically a flood song about Randall Carlson. So people can listen to that.
I was a little put off by the intro part of that music, but it was like, well, I'm like, what is this stankest rock type fuck? Like, but I think you tweaked it and made it a little better.
The epic rock. It's I don't know. You will see. Everyone else just likes it because no one else is
an epic rock connoisseur. I know. I have my CDs behind me. I have, yes.
You'd be taken aback.
I was the one listening to Europe in 1985.
You could sing that shit. I mean, if you want, you could sing that. You could make your own. You could sing it, and we could do a total parody.
That would be awesome. Yeah, let's do.
The thing is, the music's going to be so sharp that I feel like your singing might fall short. But I'm willing to try this.
You've seen me do Mr. Roboto twice live.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I've seen you do this. I'm all over this. Let's do it. I'm totally 100% on board. Try this out.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
You sing it. Sing that shit. If you want, I could send you the lyrics.
This song.
You can use these lyrics.
Yeah.
There you go. You have something to practice.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna have to listen to Europe like the final countdown like about 10 times just to get that rhythm right.
It was a full week.
To stand tall.
The Arrested Development song.
What?
Yeah, that was Job's Magic song. Remember
the final countdown?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. They're just taking the piss then.
Oh yeah, yeah, big time.
See, I have a reverence for the 80s rock. I really do.
Yeah, it was your golden age, buddy.
It was. I'm in my reminiscence phase right now.
What happened?
Yeah.
Well, it was a long week away.
I was charging my phone in the car yesterday because, was it yesterday?
Oh yeah, the power went out. The
power was out, and I was cranking Boston in there in the CDs. I was having my CDs in the car because that's all I had. I was charging my phone, and Maria comes in. She's like, "Turn the fucking music down. Turn it off." I'm like, "Can you hear it from that old car? Has a good stereo in it."
Which old car?
The Le Sabre, the 2002 Le Sabre. Yeah.
Are you still ripping that thing?
I'm still ripping that thing, man. And because you know why? Now I've reinvigorated my CD collection and I have a bunch of good CDs in there all the time.
Or is it because the truck's broken?
Well, and that too, yeah. Yeah. But the truck doesn't have any, like the truck doesn't just has an AM radio. I mean, I need to figure that out. That's the other issue, right? So I went to the music store to try it and the stereo store to see what it would take to get a stereo for the truck. It's like $700 for a plate that the black back plate to fit it in. Guys.
Dude, we could put a stereo in that truck that pounds pretty good for like under a grand. I mean, that's if you want an amp and shit.
Well, I don't want that. I just want my phone to connect to something that.
Oh yeah. So just, dude, I put the Apple Play in my truck for $275.
How'd you fit it in if it's not fit perfectly? Did you make your own back plate?
Right size. I just cut it the right size. I just cut the fucking hole the right size.
So no.
No? Well, I'm just ripping around for like well over a year now, a year and a half in this truck.
All right. Okay. Take some pictures.
Haven't you been in there?
No. I don't know. I don't think I have. Anyways, what else I want to talk about? Oh, the trips. So the other trips. Yeah, we should mention Tennessee. So I've got some OG Grimericans lined up to come to Tennessee, the Tennessee Reset. And we might have I haven't talked to you about it, though. We just texted about it. But I might have a special addition to the Tennessee Reset for us, too.
Interesting.
As far as an event. But I won't say it now because it's not confirmed. But
confirmed.
A couple of OGs, couple of the people that are in the first CAC 2018 might come to check it out.
Is that the CSA?
Yep. No, before that, actually. So it would be a 2017 contact at the cabin. Next year will be 10 years of CACs.
That really narrows the field because that was just like six of us.
Yeah.
No, it's not Michael. So I'm going to say, you know, and I know it's not Adam. So it's got to be Cyrus.
He's working on it.
You know what? That motherfucker's been working on it for 10 years. That's not true. Yeah, I think he showed up at Seaside and he showed up at a Randall event before as well.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
so
been there. Got
to meet Randall. Of course, for sure the people he's not gonna be the extra add-on though, is he?
No. The add-on is an event type thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course that we know for sure Brandon Powell's gonna be there and Mark English. So both past Grimerica guests.
England.
Mark England. Right.
Mark English.
So it was a long week away in the fall. I missed the kids' first week of school. So we're into week two over here at school, which is fine. It was Labor Day, long weekend. I got the motor in that other boat before I left, so that was good. I do have a bit of wiring and stuff in there to get it really running. But I have just pulled that off to the side for now because I'm not going to need it this year. I do still want to get it out in the water this year, maybe. We'll see. But it is hunting season. Today is the first day, opening day of ducks. Today, and I'm busy podcasting today and tomorrow. So maybe Thursday or Friday, get into some ducks. Actually, on Friday, I'm going on Randall's show to talk about the Finger Lakes. I don't know if that'll be live. If it's live, it'll be Friday at 8 Eastern. If it's not live, I don't know. You'll see it sometime after that. But we're doing that. I'm doing that with Randall Friday. So all that to say, I had to get this big boat out of the way so that I'm ready for hunting stuff. And I got this little green boat that I've been working on that I haven't been working on. I just got it here, put the motor on it, got the motor running, tried to run the steering. Steering was too short. I'd already cut all the other steering that was original to the boat. So
all fishing boat or?
This is that shitty little green boat that I got for free. I don't know how I ended up tangled up in this one. I was going after it for the trailer, I think. And then I'd stop messaging buddy, and he messaged, this was the one that I traded that old dirt bike for. That old dirt bike that didn't work, that I was starting to think about, how am I going to get rid of this thing? And then this guy was like, well, what do you got to trade? So I sent him some pictures of some of my junk, and he was like, I'll take the dirt bike. And then when I was loading up the dirt bike, I had that old mini quad there that all my kids have outgrown. It probably starts, probably runs fine with a little tune up. I was like, you want this thing too? He's like, fuck yeah. So I was like, cool. So I went there, gave him that stuff, picked up this boat and trailer. And then I gutted the boat. So it's like a little green rider boat. It's almost like the sort of like the red one, but sort of like a shitty green, beat up. So I ripped all the seats out of that, ripped the windshield off of it. I'm going to cut a big, huge hole in the bow for decoy storage. And then I'm building a blind for it, and I'm just doing it up just for duck hunting. A couple spotlights. I ordered a bunch of like
Whoa, wait. You're doing a blind for the boat?
Yeah, I got an old bail blind here that Nick, shout out to Nick, Lord Nick. That's Lord Nick to you, Lord Redneck Nick.
And that's probably Lord Cyrus. We should probably say Lord Cyrus too.
Lord Cyrus?
Yeah.
We're gonna give...
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I'm okay with that. Lord Cyrus and Lord Nick. Nick might not be a lord, but he's got to be close.
Well, I think anyway,
he is now. Anyway, he gave me that blind, the old bail blind, backpack bail blind. But I usually do lay downs in the field anyway, so it's just been sitting in the shed collecting dust, and I pulled it out, and it like almost fits that like hole in the boat perfectly, because it's got the bow on the front, you know, and the back has the transom where the motor is, a little like splash well area a little bit where gas tank goes underneath and the battery. So I just like framing that stuff straight down, so where the old dash and steering wheel is will come right down and be sealed into the floor. And where the gas tank is will come down and be sealed. And I'm going to just put a couple extra holes back there so you can fill the tank through back there. And then I'm going to put a pedestal right in the middle at the back with a bench up the front in front of the pedestal. And a couple of those gun claws. So I'll have a couple gun racks on either side of the pedestal. Then the bench will be for ammo boxes. And then I ordered a couple of like just mesh pockets, like 3 foot by a 10 inch mesh pockets that you screw into the side. So you got some little storage there. I got a couple of spotlights in the shed I'm going to put on it, two in the front and one in the back. And then I'll order, like, remember I had those blue lights on the other boat that I sold? They're like $13 for a 6-pack of those blue lights. I'll probably get some of those. Maybe not in blue, but just something. So when it's dark, you get there and it's pitch black, you got some spotlights to turn on. You can throw out your decoys, turn out the spotlights, then you still got some cabin lights to sort of get your shit together or you're shooting. Because we're out in the dark a lot.
So hang on. Are you going to, like, you're going to just sit in the boat? You're going to settle down, put the blinds up and sit in the boat and shoot out of the boat?
Yeah, I ordered
two. Shallow water, like just.
Yeah.
So you don't have to wait. You don't have to find the reeds and the woods that are on the shore. You can actually just get into the water.
Just get into the boat. Throw all the decoys into the bow storage, rip across the lakes, fucking pop the blind. So I'm going to like fit the blind so it like pops up. So the other thing I ordered was a bunch of little, like, just little like things you screw into the boat, and it's just a little loop sort of thing so you can feed something through it.
Yep.
And then I ordered a bunch of this like 2-inch elastic strapping. So I'll have that going through these loops all around the boat so you can strap reeds to it everywhere. And then the blind that pops to the top has straps on it already to strap reeds to. So you'll just look like a little reed thing. And then we'll drive it like into the reeds pretty much, because then I got these two little rod things that you put on the back of the boat that sort of clamp to the back and poke down into the dirt. So instead of having a pull anchor, it just doesn't let it rock, you know? They're actually into the ground, so you have to go into water that's, you know, less than 6 feet deep, I guess.
Well, yeah, which you want to be, because you want to be hopping out and getting, you have to hop out and.
Yeah, you might have, yeah, you have to put a platform at the back.
Yeah,
you don't want to be just out in the open water shooting shotguns off and, you know, you both shoot in the same direction at the same time and tip this fucking boat over.
Well, dude, that's exciting. And do people do that all the time, or are you just making this up?
People do it all the time. I mean, I seen a boat for sale for like $6,000 that was all done up a while back. But then I had this boat and I was just like, well, what am I going to do with it? Because I could just fix it up and sell it. But then it's like, I got even my boat's kind of a production to go fishing sometimes, you know? Whereas like if me and Sean just want to go fishing, it'd be nice to just have a little boat that goes fast enough that we can get to the fishing spot. It's like super easy to launch, super cheap to run. I mean, that Merc is an event, dude. It's like fucking an event every time you go to the lake. So, I mean, it's great. It's fast. It's good. And the inboard is going to be even more of an event. You know, it's a huge engine in it. It's big boat. It's going to be great. But doing that, it's just like, well, it'd be nice to have the little fishing boat. The tin boat was a little bit much. You know, I want a steering wheel. I want that kind of stuff. It was too slow. A 25 will still rip for me a little bit. Get me up the lake to the fishing spot. Then I got the motor for $150 and the boat for free. So then I was just like, well, man, if I dump another, you know, few hundred bucks in wood in this thing, and I just bought.
Plus you're doing fishing. Plus you're doing hunting, like literally duck hunting trips. So you're going to have people coming from all over, and it would be a great experience to try that too. Not just from the shore, but from the water too.
Yeah. I bought all the spray paint today. So I painted it all today. I fucking camoed it all right out. I did like a base layer of the green. Then went over it with the black and then over it with the brown. So it's all camoed out now. And I got all the plywood. So tomorrow I'm going to start. Well, not tomorrow, because tomorrow is a fucking shit show recording day. But Thursday, yeah, I guess, I'll start putting the wood in. And I expect it to come together, I mean, fairly quickly. Because the floor and the sides, so after I'm done building it, I'm just going to buy a thing of... you know, you see at the hardware store, you could buy the truck bed liner. I'm going to just fucking do the whole inside of the boat because the bow will come straight down with wood. I'm going to have the transom back come straight down with wood. So you just have like a wood pod with a bench. And I'm just going to do it all in truck bed liner.
Yeah, that's good.
So it's like that kind of grippy.
Yeah.
Grippy.
That's good. Wow, that sounds exciting. That's super exciting.
Yeah, it'll be a good little boat. I'm looking forward to getting it done and getting it out on the water. Ripping some duck hunting. I think it'll be a little bit easier. You know, instead of going and driving around the lake and picking a spot and dragging the stuff in, we just go to the boat launch. The decoys are in the boat. The guns are in the boat. Just go crash into some reeds somewhere and pop the blind up. We'll see how it goes.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we should mention, mention the other trip too, just Bob, before we forget. So we mentioned the Tennessee Reset and the trip next spring into
Sicily.
Malta, Sicily, and Sardinia.
Yeah, that's coming up quick. That's going to be in April, end of April, right before the final scab line. So busy start of summer, end of spring, I guess, transition period, be busy. People want to come to that. There's still some spots open for Sicily, Sardinia, Malta. It's going to be fucking epic. The itinerary is amazing. We can almost do a show down the road here where we just go through the itinerary and pull up.
Oh, we should do that. We should do that for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think people will be surprised at the amount of stuff that's on these three islands.
Yeah, we should do that. And then, of course, we are going back to Easter Island in about a year and a half from now. Back to the Rapa Nui, Easter on Easter Island. And Alejandro will have his new house built by then, so it's going to be a good time. I mean, we made good with the locals. So as special and amazing as the first trip was, this trip is going to be even better because this time it's going to be like going back to see old friends where we don't have the first like 3, 4, 5 days of awkwardness getting to know each other.
We even let the locals win at karaoke. We had a karaoke battle.
I thought we won. They stormed out.
No, they...
they stormed out. That means we won. They were probably better singers. But we didn't get our top talent up there either. And everyone was super drunk. So, what a coincidence. The last night just happens to be karaoke night. And everyone gets to sleep in the next day except me because they decided they needed... Alejandro tells me at 3 a.m. He's like, oh yeah, by the way, we need 2 rooms ready by 10 a.m.
Yeah.
So I had to check out at fucking 10 a.m. super hungover and walk all over town trying to figure out a way how I was going to get my staff off the island and back to Canada, back to Alberta.
Yeah.
Hold it off. Well, support the show. GrandAmerica.ca/support. It is critical, mission critical, that you support the show over at GrandAmerica.ca/support. We do have some people to thank this week. Includes last week, of course, because we weren't here last week doing intro. So we have $5 from Nathan Kemet, Kemet, something like that. So thank you for that. We also have, we had a new patron. Did I send you the picture where they were calling Lake America? My phone said Lake America, and or my phone said Lake Ontario, and Timmy's phone said Lake America.
Yeah.
New recurring subscription, $10 a month, $10 a month from Jacqueline Hertzfield. So thanks
buddy. That. Or Jacqueline.
Jacqueline. I never met a dude named Jacqueline. We got Dave Baxter, $18 a month on Patreon.
Wow. Thanks, Dave. Holy, that's great.
Yeah. So thank you for that, Dave. Let us know if you guys have notes you want to read. Let us know all that stuff. It's been a busy fall. I mean, it's hunting season already. There is still probably some room. We could probably squeeze some people in if they want to still come hunting on that. I know Mark, I think, is coming with his son still. I haven't heard that he's not, and he already made a deposit, so I assume that he is. But that's coming up. That's, just over a month away. I mean, Tony must be freaking out. I was just hanging out with Keith. Keith is coming over back to do that right away. So exciting times. As of today, duck season is a go. Still pretty warm, so I'm not in a major rush to finish the boat, but I am eager to go and get it out. So,
well, we also have the book club. You should mention that.
Right. I forgot all about the book club. We launched the coolest book club ever. We did the big launch party. What was it? 3 weeks ago now. We had the launch party. We are up to, like, I think 255 members or 254 or something like that.
Yeah.
We did upgrade to like $100 a month plan so that we could just get a regular URL. Nice and easy one for you guys. It's just school with a K.com/audiobooks. We got almost all the audiobooks available there. So it's an easy platform. If you're already on school, you can subscribe there for $10 a month, get access to 250 plus audiobooks over there. There's also a whole book club aspect to it that you can get into for free. You don't have to spend any money to do that. You can just join for free and get a free book every month, discuss it with people. There's chapter check-ins, and just coming up, I think just 2 days, we'll have our first council call where we jump on and talk about the book.
Yeah. That'll be great. And I'm going to start reading. I think I'm going to start reading regularly in there. Kind of a behind the scenes in the studio narration of, I'm going to start with Cosmic Consciousness, which is a book from Buck back in the early 1900s, talking about, it's pretty interesting, some of the stuff that we talk about now, as far as consciousness goes. He gets into the higher form of awareness beyond ordinary self-consciousness and outlines the purpose of the study. And then, so it goes into evolution and devolution from self to cosmic consciousness in part three. And then part four is where he gets into like Buddha, Christ, Plotinus, Muhammad, Dante, all that. So he talks about these instances of our famous, you know, philosophers and religious disciples from the past and how they are examples of this. So I'm going to start reading that one live probably this week. Probably at 9 o'clock our time. That'll be 11 Eastern in the morning.
In the morning, a couple new books coming out right away. They're already on the website and on the school. What are they again? It's like the
Oralinda book.
And Egyptian Magic.
And Egyptian Magic, yeah. Yeah, both very interesting.
So check that out. Of course, adultbrain.ca or school.com/audiobooks. And then there is also the simulation maps at simulationmaps.com. So all that stuff to check out, as well as the other podcast, GrandAmericaOutlawed.ca. So the other thing I met Julian Dory on the trip.
Cool. So,
it was a star-studded appearance. Ithaca, though, it's really I don't know. It's different. It's different over there. They do things different out east than we do it here. But there was some, and there's a couple from the Bronx and a firefighter that right from Manhattan firefighter, just like the thickest, like prototypical New York accent. But the nicest guys, the nicest people you ever met.
Oh, yeah.
Totally the nicest people. So, you know, because New York people aren't all assholes.
They're back east, man. They're super friendly and all that. Have you seen that meme where I don't know if it's back east Canada or the States, but it's like somebody pretending that they know the other person. They call and say, oh, hey, how you doing and all this? And then they just fake this whole conversation about, oh, yeah, doing well. And then they realize like, oh, I don't even know.
What happens at the border, though? They also seem to have like a real hard work ethic. They're like, you know, when you go to someplace from New York or something like that, or New Jersey or Philadelphia, if you go, say, down south or out west, you get hired right away. Because people know you're like from a different culture, that's a work culture. Whereas out west, California, these places are, you know, a bit of a lazy culture. And I was like, that doesn't transcend the border. I was like, when we see people from out east, we're like, oh boy. Union boys. Anyway, we love you guys. We really do. Support the show, grammarica.ca/support. It's important. Do you have a bio for Deborah and Richard?
Yeah, I'm just going to wing it here. Deborah Stengel and Richard Kappel from highviberelationship.com. That's their book, Why Love Isn't the Problem and What Actually Is. SedonaSoulAdventures.com is their award-winning couples therapy workshop / retreat. Amazing stuff there. Richard,
yeah, comes. They were slumming it with us.
Yeah, they were slumming it with us for sure. Yeah. But I mean, dude, it resonated because we've done books on these relationships before. We've had some people on, episodes on relationships before. So, but yeah, he comes from the boardrooms of Silicon Valley and she comes from the courtrooms, and they partnered up. He joined her in her venture of this Sedona Soul Adventures, and they've done an amazing job. And the book is cool and the chat is really fun. So check it out.
Check it out.
I'm losing
my voice. Support the show. America.ca/support. Other than that, I love you guys. Thanks for listening. Actually, no, I don't do that at this part. That's the end of the show. Enjoy the chat. Enjoy the chat. Just enjoy the chat with Deborah and Richard. It's a good one.
Hey, Deborah and Richard, welcome to Gray America. How are you guys doing?
Really good. Hey. Thanks, Yaron.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this will be fun. Highviberelationship.com is your website. SedonaSoulAdventures.com. I mean, you guys are up there in very popular, marriage counseling, couples counseling in Sedona. So congratulations. Oh,
yeah. Thanks.
You seem to be doing great.
Yeah, I've been doing it for, 20 plus years.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Well, can we start with your turnaround? I mean, we love these stories in Gray America. We've been talking about this type of stuff for over 10 years now, about people having these spiritual awakenings, let's call it, or whatever it is, right? Some turnaround. Can we start with that? Cause you guys, you came from the boardrooms of Silicon Valley, Richard, and you're from the courtrooms, Deborah. So interesting backgrounds. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a divorce attorney for over 20 years in Omaha, Nebraska, and I hated it. And in January of 1999, I was really at a low point in my life. Literally every part of my life was a mess, including that I just really, really hated my work. I mean, I loved the part where I felt like I was helping people, but that only felt like about 10% of the time of what I was doing. The rest of it was just fighting and arguing with the other. So I came to Sedona and I literally had a mystical experience. I got the message that I had to change my life or I was going to die. I mean, literally, I had a vision that told me that. And I went home and spent 6 months closing my law practice. I started coming out to Sedona half time, working with different practitioners here, doing my own personal healing work, and then moved here in 2001 and started Sedona Soul Adventures in 2002. And what we do are retreats that are custom designed for individuals and couples, not with groups, but we work completely one-on-one or two-on-one. And we have found that that is the way to really help people transform their lives and especially transform their relationships. So we've saved a lot of lives. We've saved a lot of marriages. And I have to say that doing this is way more fun than divorcing people.
Yeah. Can you talk about your mystical experience at all?
Yeah, I absolutely can. For 5 years before I came here, I was literally meditating and praying, really complaining and saying to God, I'm so unhappy. Please tell me what to do. And I would hear this little voice in my head that would say, you need to leave your law practice. And instead of listening to that, I would get mad. And I would literally be saying things like, how can I possibly leave my law practice? I'm the sole support for the two of us, not Richard and I.
No.
This was my former husband that I was married to at the time and in a very dysfunctional, not great marriage. And so I'm supporting both of us. We have no money in savings. In fact, we were $50,000 in debt from some bad business decisions that he had made, but I was responsible for because we were married. And so I had 5 years of that. And then when I got to Sedona, I'm doing a session and all of a sudden in this session, Isis, the winged Egyptian goddess, appeared to me in a vision and she said, you either leave your law practice now or you're going to die like your mother did. And I realized that I was exactly the age my mother was when she got sick and died 5 years later. And I could tell that I was on the same path. I was feeling resentment and felt hopeless and helpless and stuck. So I went home and spent 2 weeks with my lawyer brain trying to figure out how I was possibly going to leave my law practice when we had no money in savings. I was the sole support for the two of us, and we were $50,000 in debt. And suddenly this one day I was meditating and went into this place of just total surrender. And I said, God, I'm going to do this, but I've got to have some help. And within just hours, I got a phone call from one of my clients whose case was finished. I do not know why he called me. And at the end of the conversation, he said to me that he had just started a new business refinancing mortgages. And I said, could you get me some help on my mortgage payment? He called me back in 10 minutes and said, I can cut your mortgage payment in half and I can get you $50,000 in cash. Now, nobody knew that I was $50,000 in debt. I was ashamed of that. And so I really saw that as my first really big sign that, yes, I'm on the right path for what I'm supposed to be doing.
Wow. And what about you, Richard?
Yeah, well, mine's a little different story. I mean, I was obviously doing international business, living overseas, Singapore, Japan, Philippines, ended up in Silicon Valley, as you said, boardrooms, doing the high-end CEO stuff or C-suite stuff. And I had everything. I had the money. I had the cars, I had the houses on the beach, Pacific Ocean. I had a Dodge Viper that I was quite proud about. I had everything, but you know, there's that bit of your inside of you that just really wasn't up. Cause I used to meditate a lot. I used to write poetry. I used to have this really spiritual life. Cause when I was in Japan, for example, I'd go to different temples and I'd meditate all day. And that's how I'd connect in and kind of work with that. But that really wasn't part of who I was. What was really going on for me, I was doing the Silicon Valley success thing and I was killing it, man. It was great. But the problem is my heart was not being fed. My soul wasn't being fed. So in those situations, if you don't listen once, you don't listen twice, you get the 2x4 to the head. I had a stroke. And wow. Basically, you know, laying on Stanford Medical Stroke Center, the best stroke center in the world, sitting there, laying there and kind of making the decision. Well, doctors here tell me it's going to be a really rough road back. You know, they looked at the MRIs and such, and And it said, you know, so I lay there, I had to figure out, well, why am I going to be here? And I basically decided not to leave. And I said, I'm going to stick this out. And when I came back out, I reconnected with my spiritual side and said, you know, this is the life I want to live. I want to live in service. So then after that, I basically worked my way into teaching university for 12 years. Yeah, imagine that. So I could give back, right? Because university is exactly well known for pay. And that's what I did until I met this fine young lady on Match.com. And because I was in San Jose and she was in Sedona at the time. And then, as they would say, the rest is history.
Nice. So did your divorce attorney, like being in the courtrooms with all this, how does that play into you guys helping people? Like, you must have a lot of experience seeing the problems that relationships and people had.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that I started seeing over and over again were that people were marrying the same person over and over again. They just had a different name and a different face. During that 20 years, I had a bunch of people that I did 3 divorces for. And that's what I was seeing. Or I would have somebody coming in, they'd do the divorce, and then they'd come back 5 years later and they'd say, guess what? I married another alcoholic, or I married another controlling woman. And so I started to see how there were these patterns that were going on. And it wasn't until I came to Sedona and really started doing my own personal healing work and really got into how people can heal and what's causing the patterns and all of that, that I could see that these were not people marrying the wrong person. This was not somebody, you know, being unlucky in love. It's these underlying issues that if they're not healed, you're going to keep bringing them up over and over and over again, because that's what our soul does. Our soul brings them up over and over again until they're healed. And unless and until they're healed, you're going to bring in the same experiences over and over again.
What kind of issues are we talking about? Like even past life stuff too, or childhood trauma? Like what are some of the most common ones that people aren't, or is it like past relationship issues? Because I know I get triggered from like just past relationship stuff with my current wife. Not a lot, but you know, it's like you can tell when it's like, oh, because you're not listening to me right now. So I'm getting all like, you know.
Right. Well, it's the simple answer is all the above.
Yeah.
You know, we actually have a name for it. We call it gunk, because it is the combination of things like core wounds, you know, birth trauma, you know, your ex, you know, and what happened during that situation, or even past lives, karma. So all that stuff plays into really the stuff called gunk that you're carrying around, and you're going to like this. It's in your nervous system. It's stuck in your body. It's energy stuck in your body, whether it's your heart, your lungs, your liver, depends upon the type of emotions fit different places in your body, because it's a kind of a tuning fork, if you would say it that way. So for us, we look at until you clear that stuff out, your nervous system doesn't have a chance to re-regulate. It doesn't have a chance to not be triggered. Here's some statistics. There's a 2017 study. They were in looking at the, you're going to have to say it's
amygdala.
Like, I'm a tongue-tied guy on that one. But the amygdala, the idea is, they've said, well, how fast is this little puppy fire, right? And what it does is dumps adrenaline and all this other stuff. And over long term with the ACH axis, it puts too much cortisol in your system, which of course raises up your flora being triggered. But at the end of the day, here are the two numbers you need to remember, 40 and 140. Between 40 and 140 milliseconds, your little amygdala fires off. You don't have a chance, man. Your brain, your frontal cortex does not start getting all this stuff together to 3 to 5 seconds after something happens. So you're off to the races way before. I mean, your wife or partner just said something. And they said it in a way that makes your nervous system think, there's a lion there. It's coming to eat me. You can't tell the difference. And so until that's healed, you really don't have a chance to let your frontal lobes do the thinking.
So you can't talk your way out of that. You can't think your way out of it, because your thinking process isn't even working. And you can take every anger management class in the book or in the world, and it's not going to help you.
Learn how to fight fairly doesn't help.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't help.
So this is the thing. Everybody's got gunk. And I mean, we're talking everybody. And I mean, over the last 20 years, we've had Oscar winners here. We've had Super Bowl winners here. We've had celebrities here.
Not enough hockey players.
And, you know, and of course, housewives and teachers and, you know, and business people and all of that. Everybody's got it. The question is, how did it come in and how is it showing up? And that's the stuff that's just really, it's actually fascinating. It's so interesting. And then when you discover it, and then when it's healed, then you just don't even have the same issues coming up over and over again because your amygdala is not getting triggered in the same way. Your neural pathways aren't operating in the same way. And that is when your nervous system finally starts to calm down and go into safety, because that's what's happening. We get triggered and we feel I'm not safe.
Yeah, subconsciously, right? Like, it's not like you're even thinking, I'm not safe.
Automatic. Exactly. That's the point. You can't think your way out of it. That's the point.
Exactly.
And it just happens like that.
Right.
Yeah. Darren, you got any questions at all?
It seems like that's a pretty prominent thing. Is that, are sort of the triggers for it usually the same as well, or the sort of common themes among them?
There's the trigger all comes from, where is the gunk coming from? But all of them kind of go down to, I'm not safe. And so the trigger can be anything, whether it's money, whether it's criticism, whether it's defensiveness, whether it's, you're not listening to me. For most people, it goes into some sort of core wound. And that's the most common thing that we see. I mean, there's also birth trauma and karma and these other things.
An example. For example, for me, growing up in my family, it's a pretty, you know, nice family. It was not divorced and had these other issues. But I grew up not feeling like I could be loved. And so everything in every relationship I have ever since growing up, I was playing out this story of I'm unlovable. And so I would bring things up to just reinforce that trigger until I was able to later on in my life address it, figure it out, heal it. And so then that trigger is gone. So then the unlovable part is away. So it's not necessarily male or female. It's everybody's got these, depending upon what came up in your life, or as we said before, in karma before this instantiation.
So do you guys do that with couples, or just, you mentioned like not in groups, but it's is it always couples, or sometimes you just do single people as well?
Yeah, our retreats are custom designed, and they're for individuals. Couples. Now, we wrote this book primarily for couples, but also for individuals who are looking for love. We have a chapter on that, because there's all, usually when someone has a situation where they can't find Mr. Right or Ms. Wonderful, it's because of some underlying thing, or they keep bringing in partners who cheat on them, or mistreat them, or control them, or whatever. So our retreats are for individuals or for couples. Mm-hmm. And the book is primarily for couples, because we just find so much of this is playing out all the time in relationships.
And one of the motivations we had is we went back to the Harvard Grant study, which has been going on for about 80 years, where they looked at what are the long-term sources of health, wealth, and I guess happiness, and happiness in general. And what they found out is that your primary relationship, the strength in that, the positive part of that, is the number one attribute for long-term health, wealth, and happiness, a bar anything. So if you look at that and you look at them focusing on couples, so if we can make couples relate better, give them practices that if they do get triggered, how do you deal with that? Because we're all getting triggered all the time because we're human, right? And how do we work through that? Then it helps these people. And then, of course, the ripple effect, not just them, but their family, their friends, their coworkers, you know, all around the planet, so to speak, it helps then sort of the world get to be a better place to hang out and have fun, which is
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that's the person you're spending the most time with, you know, all through your life. So the book is High Vibe Relationship, right? Why Love Isn't the Problem and What Actually Is.
The gunk.
The gunk. Nice.
Richard, you kind of touched on your healing process. Would you mind unpacking that a little bit, what that sort of looked like? Because
Sure.
Like, did you go to Deborah? Is that how, like, cause you guys met on Match. So I don't think you met in a professional capacity. So it sounds like you sorted this out on your own before you got there.
Great question. Well, I had started up in a pretty religious Catholic family to begin with. I was an altar boy, did a lot of service in the community through that, was actually studying to be a priest. That was because I was kind of the older son of an Irish Catholic family. So I was kind of like in the mode of doing that. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for me, or fortunately, and I got into the business career and such. But I was really attached to things like meditation, Buddhism. I was really looking at these other things. So my life had been from a perspective of really expanding out and looking at alternative ways of what's going on in existence. So I kind of forgot that when I was in, you know, kind of cranking like crazy in Silicon Valley, because you're working a lot, you're traveling a lot. But when I had that stroke, to your point, I now had the time to sit there with myself as I was healing, because it took a long time, 2.5 years to heal back on that, to sit there and ask myself the question, okay, I have the money, and it's very rare that people can sit there and say, I've got the money, now what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I was at that unique moment because of that stroke. That's where I took the opportunity to dig deep into myself, to find my spiritual, I'm a mystic by my spiritual practices. And then given that, I started meditating with the monks, the Buddhist monks. I started doing breath work. I started doing body work. I started doing all these modalities to deepen my practice, so that years later, when I finally met Deborah, who obviously had done her practice, we kind of were met at the same level, which was, you know, 12 years earlier. And so we both see that this is the model for our couples as well. You do your individual work, right? You're 100% responsible for your own thing, right? I've got my gunk, you've got your gunk. I can support Deborah in her gunk, right? But it's still hers, right? I have to listen to it and get all the other stuff, and she has to listen to mine. And so for me, I was doing my work, she was doing work before we met each other. And our commitment to our own healing process, I think, was fundamental for us being attracted to each other, because I was tired of people doing the talk, but not the walk.
And he was doing a lot of the processes in California that we do here.
Right.
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah. And he had a guru. And
Don't you? Doesn't everybody?
So that was one of the huge gifts for me when we found each other, when he found me, was to connect with someone. And this is what I'd been praying for, was to bring in a man who was really spiritually motivated. And so to find that was just such a huge gift.
And the same for me. I mean, I was looking at a woman who was spiritually motivated, you know, inward versus outward, you know, modalities, who was a business person, understood my business background, understood, you know, the fact that maybe I work a little too hard sometime, but that's kind of who I am. But so she understood me from the really, really inside out. And that's something I had been missing in my life. And my first marriage didn't have that, although it was wonderful in many other ways. So it was a great match for us when we finally did, you know, do that match.com like ding as it happened.
You mentioned being sort of financially set. How big of a factor is that? Does that play? Is it easier if you don't have to worry about money? I mean, it sounds, because some people don't have the ability to go out and pray with these people and do those sorts of things. Does that just sort of expedite it, or how does that sort of play out across the thing to someone who, say, you know, just doesn't find they have any free time between kids and work and this and that? They're just sort of scrambling around, which I'd imagine is probably a lot of your clientele as well.
Exactly. And that's a really good point, because, you know, yes, I was, to your point, I had a unique situation, right? I was able to do many of the things there, but, you know, I was still working full time and teaching college. So there's a job and doing the things. But what we find is that if you can commit just maybe 5 or 10 minutes of your day, you can meditate for 5 or 10 minutes. My guru, he was very famous to say, well, you know, you can meditate for an hour if you want, but all you need is 5 minutes. All you need is 5 minutes. And I think if you carve out just a little bit of time a day, that can help you slowly turn that boat to the direction you want.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it makes a big difference. Just that awareness of your triggers and all that. It really does start getting built, making you build a foundation on, or helping you build a foundation on, right, like what you're talking about, recognizing these triggers. I had a couple experiences meditating quite a few years ago where just I had that like epiphany of like, oh, I'm not my thoughts. I kind of had sort of learned how to like watch the thoughts. And it was like, a moment where I remembered like lying on, you know, on the couch meditating and realizing, oh, that's what they mean. You know, that's what Eckhart Tolle means by watching your thoughts, that kind of thing. So, and that was, I think, the start of me changing my nervous system a little bit where things don't trigger me as much. Like I could drop something on the floor. And whereas before I would have like freaked out and just like, and just calmly just look down and watch it. Like, I remember these moments where I was like, I didn't even react to that at all. Like there was no like subconscious trigger happening.
Well, and that is the biggest piece of where all this comes from, is where you are coming from, what your intention is. And you can go into altered states of bliss just with breath. That's a big piece of what we do here. And that isn't something where you've got to spend any money. People can do that with their own breath. And so a lot of what we're talking about is wanting to bring to people things that they can be doing right now that will help them feel better, that will take them out of that reactive state, and that can give their nervous system the kind of calm that it needs for their relationships to be even better.
Yeah. And again, another little shameless plug here. Our book's not that expensive, right? And it shows you these types of practices and has free links on it in terms of materials like meditation and Ho'oponopono, which some practices you can have, as well as breath work. And breath work is a good fundamental way to open up that can of worms, so to speak, in a very safe environment for yourself.
I wanted to ask you guys about the modalities too, now that we're on that topic, about if you bring couples into your workshops and all that, and you've got a variety of things like breath work and somatic release, EMDR, intuitions, those style approaches, energy work. Like, is there something that you think resonates with most people? Like, is there a modality that you think is, I don't want to say more powerful, but more, it resonates more with more people?
Yeah, it depends on what type that you're talking about. And yes, I do believe that breath work, and I've been a breath worker actually since the late 80s. And I believe that breath work is, and we're talking connected breath, where people are doing breath that is connected for like over an hour, where it's literally designed to move you into an altered state of consciousness. Because when people have that experience, what you were just describing a minute ago about being in meditation and having that feeling come over you, and you can make that happen with your breath and just be open to it. So what we do is all of our retreats are custom designed. And we have over 50 practitioners here in Sedona who are just masters at what they do. And all of them do like two or three different modalities. So we literally have almost any modality that you can think of, we have here. And so before people come or do the retreat online, we spend a lot of time talking to them to really get an idea of what's going on, what's happening, what do you want to have happen. And then we custom design the retreat, designed completely for them. And then the retreat has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the beginning part is really the finding and releasing the gunk. And even on the couples retreats, that's where we have the people working individually, because my gunk is different than your gunk. And so we need to work with that first. Where did it come from? How is it showing up? How is it showing up in the relationship? Then they do breath work individually, and we always have people doing that. And we have a process that I developed over the last few years called the Sedona formula. And this is actually a process that has over 30 different modalities in it. So our practitioners are trained in that. We have about 15 practitioners who do that process. And so over a two hour period, they are able to intuitively know, okay, for this person who is sitting in front of me, I'm going to pull in this one and that one and this modality and that modality. And so we have this amazing process for finding and releasing and then starting to heal the gunk. And then the breathwork is designed to bring them into connection on all the levels, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. So those are the two, the Sedona formula and then breathwork, which we literally have everybody do that, unless they're contraindicated for not doing breathwork. And then we have like all these other possibilities of modalities that for those particular people, we can then bring them together as a couple and doing different kinds of energy healing and intuitive work and as you said, EMDR, I mean, all the different things that are out there.
We just have like almost 1,600 different types of modalities and mixtures of that. So there's quite a lot to choose from. When we say customize, we kind of dial it in again for the individual and for the couple. Because when you have groups, you know, you have 10 of your people, you're there. Are you really going to open up in front of 9 strangers about your growing up? I mean, it's very rare that somebody has that type of safety. Most people don't. And so, you know, really to do that in the privacy of what our processes really helps people get to that.
And we have a lot of people who come to us where infidelity is the issue. And I mean, years ago, I've been in groups of couples retreats where people didn't want to open up, you know, especially, I hate to say it, men, but men don't want to open up about what they've done. And especially when you have something like infidelity, what I have seen in group retreats that I have been in, and I mean, personally been in, is that what seems to happen in those situations is suddenly the group turns on that one person and they become the bad guy. And then the wife is the good guy. And I mean, you just can't have healing in that kind of situation where you've got judgment and shame and all this other stuff that is not conducive to people opening up and healing.
That sounds amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah. And one of the other things we've done, and I'm going to highlight a part of the book, there's a process we put together that helps couples who have gone through that first steps we talked about, your own personal finding what your gunk is, healing the gunk. So when you come back together, you're kind of like an energetic baby, right? Because you've got all these things that are used to trigger each other in this relationship are now kind of gone. So when they get back together, how do they relate to each other now? What is the structure for them to get back together and rebuild the love that they probably had many years ago, right? Because they fell in love to begin with. That's legit, but the triggers got in the way. So how do we do this? So what we've done is develop this technique called the high vibe system, which is really a series of 3 basic processes. The first step is, as Deborah talked about, find and heal the gunk. The second part of the process is developing and understanding each other's what we call nurturing needs. These nurturing needs, basically, they're like love languages, but instead of 5 love languages, there's 12 nurturing needs. And they're much more precise. They're much more under, I would say, an energetic perspective. They're not like a societal, it's an energetic perspective because we're dealing with energy in the body. We're dealing with stuck energy in the body. We're dealing with releasing stuck energy in the body. And when you're born, you are born, I am born, everybody is born with an energetic signature that says, this is who you are, this is what you need. We determine that, and then we share with each of the couples, what are your basically top 4 nurturing needs? And I tell you, that's very enlightening.
It is. And so one of the things we know is that if you're not getting your needs met, you don't feel loved. You're not going to be happy. And so the question is, what are your needs? What are your partner's needs? And are you both willing to give each other what the other one needs in the way they need it? And you would think the answer to that would always be a resounding yes, but we have discovered that sometimes it isn't. And most often people don't have any idea what their needs are. And like Richard said, there's 12 and they are like the love languages, but again, much more complete, much more intuitive. And if you're not getting what you need, you're not going to feel loved and you're not going to be happy.
I was going to ask you about the love languages, so I'm glad you brought it up. Darren, what were you going to say?
How do you differ that between women and men? Do you approach it differently?
No, absolutely not.
It's all based on your, as Richard said, you're born with a particular energy signature. Mm. So it's based on your birth information. And the other piece of that is it doesn't change during your life. So these are the needs that you are always going to need, not only with your love partner, but with everybody. This is what you need. And part of the thing that happens that we see all the time is that people are very often giving other people what they need. So, for example, people with touch very often touch.
Yeah, they're doing like this, right?
What they need.
Parties, it gets real awkward, right? When they're going by and saying, hi, it's nice to meet you. You're like, whoa, hands off here. It's not my need, right?
And so if people are not getting what they need, they're going to be unhappy. We had, and the biggest thing is that people don't know what they need. We had, and I think the most amazing story of this, and we have this in our book, Michael and Susan, who came to us, and they had been married for 20 years. He had promised her during that entire time, I will never cheat on you. I will never cheat on you. I will never cheat on you. Well, fast forward 20 years, and he cheated on her with somebody at work. And this had been something where it was so important to him because he grew up in a situation where his father cheated on his mother when he was 4 years old. The mother kicked the father out. He never saw his father again. They moved in then with his grandmother and aunts. And so he was raised in this household of women where all he heard growing up was how men were terrible. You can't trust them.
Liars and cheaters.
And he vowed, I will never, ever do that. So he meets his wife. They get married 20 years later. He has this affair with this woman. And the minute his wife found out, she kicked him out, filed for divorce. They tried therapy for 6 months. It did nothing. And all that happened in therapy was that she was just angry and was calling him all these names, et cetera, et cetera. They come to us as a last ditch effort. And we find out all the stuff of the core wounds, and his core wound was, I'm not lovable. But it still wasn't doing it.
Wasn't getting it.
So we sit them down. We find out his number one need was words of praise. So we say to them, is he getting words of praise? And they both laughed, but not in a good way. And so they both said, oh no, she criticizes him up one side and down the other all day long, 24/7. Well, guess of course who was giving him words of praise at work? You know, the girlfriend.
Oh, you're so smart.
You're
such a great lover. I mean, all of it, right?
So we say to her, are you willing to do what we call the spiritual pivot, which are you willing to give him what he needs and stop criticizing him? And instead of saying yes, she gets angry and says, no, he's a child. If I don't tell him what to do, things will get even worse.
Oops.
And it's like, oh my God, not willing to do the spiritual pivot. So then we get down to his next one is gifts. And so we say, does he get gifts? And he says to us, no, when I was growing up, I never got gifts. I told her I don't need gifts. And we're like, well, wait a minute. You mean not even for Christmas or birthday? And he goes, yeah, no, I grew up like that. I don't need gifts. So then he started crying, and we said, well, how did that make you feel, not ever getting gifts, like not even on your birthday? And he just keeps crying and starts telling us about how ashamed and embarrassed he was that he would go to school after Christmas and all his friends would be talking about the toys they got, and he would make up stories about what he got for Christmas and lie about it. And think about, again, his core wound of, I'm not lovable. I'm so not lovable that my mother doesn't even give me a present for my birthday. Well, here's the clincher. Guess who is giving him gifts? The girlfriend. Not anything expensive, not anything big, just little things that showed that she was thinking about him and that touched his heart. When he started talking about this, he starts crying in these sobs.
Well, he's sobbing. I mean, this man is like, you could see he's just now releasing all these years.
And finally, his wife felt it and she got it. She was like, oh my God. And she could see how 20 years of constant criticism and 20 years of no gifts, even though he had never asked for gifts and said, don't get me anything. And then she saw that this had nothing to do with sex. It had nothing to do with anything other than he wasn't getting his needs met for 20 years. And so then, and there was a whole nother thing with her needs that she needed that he was like more than willing to give to her. And so they ended up doing a recommitment ceremony on the Red Rocks and see
for the home
thing.
Yeah.
People don't know what their needs are. They had no idea.
Well, you look at it. Society today, you go on social media, everybody tells you what, how great they're doing. Oh gosh, I would like that. I would like that boat. I would like that new hockey stick. I would like all these things, but that's not necessarily what you need inside, what you were born with. Those are the societal things. We get so confused what actually is going on inside of us and wonder why every time we get something, it falls way short of what we actually need. It's because we're grabbing at stuff. We're grabbing wants, not needs. And this process really makes that distinction. It makes it clear. And since it doesn't change, they can take this newfound language, this newfound process home and keep working it if something pops up.
And that's one of the big things that's so important about this, because with the love languages test, you take a test and your own bias comes in. And I know when I took the test years and years ago, I could tell that it was trying to get me to answer gifts. And I thought to myself, I don't need expensive gifts from somebody to make me fall in love with them. And in fact, when I fell in love with Richard, I thought he was a poor university professor. I had no idea.
Until the one day she saw me working on my portfolio at the kitchen table, said, well, what's that number down there?
I'm so proud of myself that I was like, oh. So then when I finally had the nurturing needs done with Dr. Denny, dear Dr. Denny, who taught us this and who we worked with for over 5 years until his untimely death in 2021. When I did his process, and again, it's based on my birth information, not my own bias, because when I took the love languages test, I was answering things and gifts didn't come out. But then when I did it based on my own birth information and my energy signature. And Dr. Denny said to me, that's right. You don't need big expensive gifts. You just need little things. And, you know, big things are nice too.
Big things don't matter. It helps.
It's the little things. Giving something where he's showing you, yes, I'm thinking about you. Yes, I love you. So that's the other really importance here, that your own biases don't come into the determination. Because it's based on your own energy signature when you're born.
Right.
You guys are answering all the questions before I get a chance to answer.
We have a third piece of this. The second part was the nurturing needs and how that system works and how we gave you an example of how they work for a really kind of incredible case. And the third piece that most therapists today focus on, which is important, but we put it third, not first, is communication. Communication styles. So we look at the communication styles of each person. In this case, Michael, his communication style was quiet. It was very heart-centric. His wife's at this tape was very dominant, very loud. So once they actually sat down and realized that their styles actually were getting in the way too, then with that knowledge, they can go back and kind of go, well, maybe she'll pull up a little bit on the criticism all the time. And he'll realize that maybe she can't reach his heart-centric viewpoint all the time, but he can reach out. And so they figured out a way to do that dance and improve upon it when they went home. So those three pieces in the book are kind of the part of how do you get from sort of an unconscious relationship to one that's conscious about that we're both 100% in, we're both responsible for ourselves, both responsible for how we treat each other, we're both responsible for giving what the other person needs in the way they want it, not the way I'm willing to give it. And when you get that done, how do you talk in their language, in the way they want, to keep that connection going on? Because let's be honest, every relationship has bumps. So it's growth oriented. We have lots of processes in the book to talk about what happens when the storms come in. We get storms too. Everybody does. So how do you then address those? And that's the key aspect of how do you stay in love by finding those triggers that come up all the time. How do you resolve them? How do you step back and take the time, et cetera? You'd mentioned that yourself. You step back sometimes, take a breath, and then have a process to reengage. So we're trying to help couples really get to that place where it's a day-to-day, making it a positive experience.
And I'm sure if you start that process, that the more you do that, the bigger the gap gets between the storms and the less the severity the storms have, like, you know, all that will probably start getting easier and better as you keep going through it.
Well, and it does automatically because it's neuroscience. This is how your nervous system works. When you're making and then building new neural pathways, you've got a new pathway that you're going down. You stop going off that big giant road that you were on, getting on a new path, and then making that neural pathway bigger and bigger and bigger in your brain, in your in your nervous system. Yes. And then it becomes almost automatic.
Yeah, I can see that.
We keep mentioning the needs and how people don't really know what they are, and that's tricky to figure out. I think you said there's like 12 core. Can we
12 kind of, needs.
12 needs.
Yeah. 12 nurturing needs, yes.
Can we go through what those are before we start to run out of time?
Gosh, you know what? I don't know if I have them memorized.
That's the best. Yeah.
Touch, listening, words of praise, spiritual connection. That's my number one, is needing to have a spiritual connection. Time together, sharing, teaching.
Organizing for perfection, which is not perfectionism. It's I like places, things in places, and I feel comfortable if the chi or the feng shui, if you want to use those terms, of my environment are clear. Or even another one that I have is called protection, where I basically, if we're walking down the street and somebody kind of gives Deborah an angle, a look, well, my natural thing is to step in and to protect her. So that's part of my need, is to be able to put protection around myself and around my partner. Those are some examples.
I think we got them all.
You think? Yeah. Is that 12? I wasn't counting.
Is there kind of some that men and women fall into inherently?
Not really. It's
not that we've seen. No, for the last, 10 years of doing this stuff, we really haven't seen any particular buckets or for one, because, it's people are people. Right.
Because it's an energetic thing too, right? It's from before you were patterned in life.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Deborah and I is also interesting and energetic is that, when we first met and started dating and such, we muscle tested ourselves in terms of, like, it's clear that we had this sort of synchronicity to start with in our relationship. We kind of hit it off real well, and we had these commonalities, and then we found out over time that we actually had lived together for 347 years of previous lifetimes. So to your point you make is, like, are there differences? Well, we were switching male and female too. So the energetic point you made is the point here is it's not necessarily about gender. It's really about your energetic signature you bring to whatever form you choose this turn of your incarceration. Instantiation, right?
Things I love about it, that it doesn't have a gender thing. We just have not found that. Yeah. And like, people are people, the energy is different. And I just love it that it's just all about who are you? And it really doesn't have to do with gender.
Do you, can you guys talk about some of that? I don't want to go back to the retreat and all, but you guys have had a lot of praise and recognition. Do you want to talk about some of that? The, successes and the recognition you've had officially from your retreat?
Well, it's been really wonderful. I mean, if anybody had shown me a video 27 years ago that this would all have happened
with a five-star reviews of clients,
and I mean, one of the other things that we do is we take groups to Egypt and Peru and Bali every year, and so I mean, just all this amazing stuff and all these incredible people that have come here and marriages that we've saved and lives that we've not only saved, but really transformed. I mean, it's just so amazing. So, I mean, we've been voted, best of retreats for Sedona and best marriage retreats in the U.S. for like 15 Bride years
magazine.
In a row.
That's Brides crazy.
Magazine.
Yeah.
Brides Magazine, we were one of the best marriage retreats in the world. Right. And so it's just been... It's really been staggering and really amazing.
Well, it's just been so humbling too. I mean,
the other piece of it is you have to understand that we have 50 practitioners here in Sedona, and Sedona is this amazing, incredible place that has this amazing, incredible energy. And so we have a combination of what I've called for a long time, the Sedona effect, where Sedona has this incredible transformational energy. That's the first part. And then we have these amazing practitioners from all over the world, actually, who do all these different modalities. And then the energy that people bring. And when you have that come together, it's so amazing. So like we don't claim, and I don't claim, even though I started this and we overlook it and all of this, it's the combination of all of this coming together and our amazing practitioners doing this incredible work.
And I view it this way. There are no ice rinks here in Sedona, but it's kind of like, it's like home ice advantage, right? Because we're in a place that's like one of the spiritual centers of the planet, well recognized for this, that people come here to work with us in our company to do this work because it's in a elevated sort of energetic environment called Sedona. So you talk about vortexes and all those things around. Yeah. So for us, it's the best home field advantage you could have.
Wow. What about Egypt and Peru and all that? I mean, how do those ancient sites amplify your work that you do in Sedona? I mean, that must bring a different aspect to it too.
It does. And it's a thing of, well, Sedona is an energy center. Egypt is an energy center. Bali is an energy center. Peru is an energy center. And so I just love to take people to these places and have them experience the different energies because the energies are different. And so it's just something that continually adds to the experience of what we do. It's so amazing. And it's fun. That's a whole big part of this.
What do you guys think about some of these sites yourself? Like personally, like Egypt and Peru, like some, the megalithic work, do you guys talk about the sort of the ancient civilizations at all? It seems like if you've been talking about like hundreds of years of past lives, that must come up a little bit, like Atlantis and Egypt.
We had a few lives in Egypt, let's put it that way, both in dark times. Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, from our perspective, there's a cradle of civilization there amongst other places. But for us in our lineage, that's kind of where we grew up, so to speak. So we have affinity for that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, we had one of the most impactful lifetimes that I've had, which I was doing a lot of work with even before I met Richard. And then it turned out that he was part of that as well. Mm. But also, oh, yes. I mean, do we believe that the Great Pyramid was built by 10,000 slaves with ropes and pulleys? No, we do not. I believe that it was built by an interdimensional civilization, a civilization that had something to do with Atlantis and with Lemuria. And if you look at the different pyramids that are around the world, and particularly like in Chichen Itza and in Peru, you know, Peru has pyramids. Peru has mummies. A lot of people don't know that. So I think there's all these connections. I think it's a civilization or civilizations that were long ago before mankind of as we see it now. And it's a big piece of our tours of what we talk about. One of the big fun things that we talk about.
Be honest, you know, we have a ton more questions than we have answers.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, we really don't know either, but isn't it really interesting to think this way?
Yeah. And really.
Yeah, totally. Did you have any ISIS experiences since that when you went back to Egypt at all?
Oh yeah. I mean, the first one where she told me I had to leave my law practice, then the next time what happened, I spent the next 3 years coming to Sedona kind of at a month at a time doing my own personal healing work. And then 2 weeks before 9/11, ISIS appeared to me again in a vision and said, it's time to move to Sedona. And I'm like, for what? and my experience is they never show you the whole thing. They just show you the next step. And so by that time, I knew that I had to listen to what I was being told. So I went back to Omaha and I was told it would take 6 months to sell my house. I sold it in 3 days for $30,000 more than I listed it for. And then I moved to Sedona and I sat here for 6 months going, okay, I did what you told me to. Now what? And then I started having dreams about what would become Sedona's Soul Adventures. And what they were showing me in the dreams is that I could take what had taken me 3 years of healing and condense that into 3 or 4 days. And they showed me that It was me working one-on-one in private with these amazing practitioners. That's what had made all the difference. So that's what I did.
That's kind of the joke in the office as well. So it took you 3 years, Deborah?
It takes our people here
3 or 4 days.
But that's what, you know, it is what it is.
Yes, but she learned from it, obviously.
Yeah.
And put it into a process that helps individuals and couples over and over and over in an incredible, incredibly impactful, transformative way.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then Isis showed up a few years ago in Egypt to tell me that something was going to happen. And then my guides came in. And on the day that my guides came in, which we looked back, they reminded us later that it was 11-11-22. And when that happened, they thought I was having a stroke. I went to the hospital. I was acting like I, and Richard had had a stroke. So he knew what the
protocol was.
And I had an MRI. I had all this other stuff. And that's not what happened. And the following February from that October is when they finally came through when I was in Egypt. And so, yeah, we have all kinds of weird stories like that.
You wake up, you look over in the bed and you go like, who are you? And so from that moment until that whole day, I had this conversation with this person that looked like my wife, but clearly it wasn't my wife. And so I went into what I called, was it Esther and Jerry Hicks? So I went into Jerry Hicks mode. If you know Esther and Jerry Hicks for Abraham, because when that happened to Esther, Jerry had this list of 40 questions, right? So I'd read it all about those questions. So I started going down the list in my head, like, who are you? Are you good? Are you not? So, I mean, why are you here? Where are you from? Why are you here? I mean, you're here to take over everybody. I mean, what's the deal going on here? And so found out over a period of a couple, I guess, months of Q&A and gently, because, you know, it's a process for somebody to go through, as Deborah did, is to go through that and share essentially her neural network with other energy. And so it was really, really fascinating to hear her and what she went through. And it's been amazing to hear essentially from the other side, so to speak, their advice, their guidance.
Wow.
It's been fun.
That's an understatement. Wow.
So then how did you guys end up with the book? Is this just sort of an extension of what you've been doing, trying to get it out to more people, I guess?
Yes.
Exactly. You got it. I mean, you know, in a certain part of your lives, as you can tell, we're not spring chickens. You know, we've got these lessons we've learned, whether it's been our own personal lives, the scars we had, you know, the people we've worked with. If we can help other people, you know, get down the road in their relationships and their lives faster than we did, that's a great thing, man.
Yeah, it's such an important thing to do. I mean, it'll help families and people like you kind of described about the person's whole, like, energetic system going outwards. Like, if you fix couples, then I mean that just can affect so many people. Like, that seems to be the core of, and because each person's fixing themselves too. So,
you know, think about it. The stats for divorce are brutal, right? In North America, 50% of first divorces,
first marriages,
it's what, 66 second marriages percent, 73. So if you can figure out to get that first marriage to work out and fix, imagine the ripple effect, the kids that are now, you know, we find it's amazing when once in a while we have two young couples comes in and they said, we're the products of divorce in our family. Our parents have gone through two or three different divorces. We don't know what's up and what's not, but we don't want to go through that. Can we work with you, Deborah and Richard, to figure out how to get this gunk out of our system so that when we get married, we are clear and clean, because we do not want to go through that same stuff or have our kids go through the same stuff that we did. Now, when we get kids like that and we're like, are they like walking on water? These kids are so aware these days. They have got it figured out. And so we go like, heck yeah, let's help.
Love that.
It changes the trajectory of families, right? It's amazing.
Yeah. How can people get the book?
They can buy it on Amazon. It's available September 22nd. And it's a great book. It's fun.
HighVibeRelationship.com. Same thing.
Yes.
We invite people to obviously go pre-order. That's always a good thing on there. Okay. HighVibeRelationship.com. And we're going to have obviously the plethora of resources around that to be determined here. But
also if you go onto our website of SedonaSoulAdventures.com and sign up for our newsletter and get on our list, You'll also be able to get all kinds of bonuses when you buy the book. And we're also going to, right when we're launching it, we're going to have the Kindle version be very inexpensive. Right. And so they'll be able to get that and a whole bunch of additional bonuses.
And everything else, we're trying to make, because we have a lot of friends that, you know, travel maybe if they commute during the day for 30 minutes. And that's a good time for them to hear this. So, we're going to have all that available.
Awesome.
Yeah. Is there anything we didn't touch on that we should have got to before we wrap up?
That this is actually easier than you think. I think that everybody thinks, you know, we run into so many people now who say, I don't even want to do relationships anymore. It's just so hard.
Stocks, it's so hard.
And I don't want to go through that again. And we know, particularly from the grant study, that what makes for a happy, satisfying life are happy, satisfying long-term relationships. And we know that it's just, there's just some rules that you got to follow. Right. And if you just play the game by the rules, it's much easier than you think. And oh my gosh, it makes such a difference in how you are in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Excellent. Richard and Deborah, thank you for coming on the show. The book is High Vibe Relationship. We encourage all our listeners to check that out. Websites or social media or anything like that where people can find out more or follow you along?
Yes, SedonaSoulAdventures.com and
HighVibeRelationship.com.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, Richard.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Coming on the show.
Great.
Yeah, keep up the great work.
Thank you guys too. You guys do such great things.
What you do. Keep it up, man.
Yeah.
Keep fringe, baby. Keep on the fringe. That's where the fun stuff is.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Absolutely. Right. Okay. Have a great day, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you.
And that was a chat with Richard and Deborah. High Vibe Relationships. What'd you think?
Yeah, that was great.
That was pretty fun.
Yeah, they're helping lots of people, I think.
Bit of trouble getting it going. The Riverside stuff just keeps getting better, right? That just doesn't even work.
Right after you send him a nasty email, all of a sudden, okay, we're going to fix this guy. You can't even get guests in.
Teach me a lesson.
Yeah, teach me, yeah.
Big thanks to Richard and Deborah coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. We couldn't do the show without you. We wouldn't do the show without you. Please tell your friends about the show and support the show. GrayAmerica.ca/support. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation today if you can, when you can. That's the only thing we really got. Other than our other stuff, you can check out, which is GrayAmericaOutlaw.ca for the podcast. Contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. AdultBrain.ca for the audiobook. Of course, school.com/audiobook. School with a K is where we have the new Grimoire book club. We're up to over 222 members over there. Join it. Free to join. Book of the month. All that fun stuff. Great community going. And of course, you can become a member over there if you want to get access to over 250 books. Now, simulationmaps.com for all the simulation maps. And pegsandjokers.ca to go knock Graham off his high horse as being the Pegs and Jokers aficionado. Other than that, we do love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. Scratch, quit living these lies, and become unattached.
fuel for your worries.